Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They've served their customers for decades, finding them the right price and an insurance policy that fits them. And if there's a claim, they act as if it happened to them. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In just a moment, we will get to Tim Kirkchin. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. The Diamondbacks walk off against the Rockies.
The pitch on the way. There's a drive to left. That's a winner. Up against the wall. Diamondbacks walk it off. They beat the Rockies 4-3.
It's our play-by-play call of the day as they were able to get it done again in beating Colorado 4-3. Very pleased to be joined by the outstanding Tim Kirkchin from ESPN. Tim, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be back.
All right, so here's the softball question of the day. The fans voted. Did they get it right?
I think they did pretty well. I think the American League, they got just about perfectly. I certainly didn't have any argument with anything they came up with there. In the National League, I would have had Paul Goldschmidt as the starter at first base, but certainly not going to argue with Ryan Zimmerman being voted in by the fans. He's very deserving of being on the All-Star team. You could make a case. He could be the starter. I thought they did really well, and just another reminder that, you know, fans are paying the freight here. They should have something to say about this. And when they do as well as they did, you get some applause from me, certainly.
Yeah, no, I agree with you all the way through. And the next part of this is that when you look now at the composition of the two teams, who didn't make it that you would have thought should have made it?
Well, there are quite a few guys, because especially in the National League, we had some really good players who got left off. I think Anthony Rendon of the Nationals was having the best season of anyone not to make it, at an OPS well over 900, very good defensive player, first-place team type of thing. But there were a bunch of guys. Travis Shaw didn't make it. We had several other first basemen, third basemen in the National League, just to show you how deep that position is. And from the American League, I don't think quite as many slights, but Logan Morrison was one that I looked at and wondered why he didn't make it, given his OPS is also well over 900, way more than 20 home runs now, which is amazing. But it just goes to show you how productive some players have been in this year of the home run. So many guys having good years, Justin Turner, people like that, didn't make it. And there's still one more fan vote to go, so maybe Morrison makes it, maybe Turner makes it, maybe Rendon makes it, who knows. But it's a really talented group out there this year, to say the least.
Tim, you mentioned that answer, the year of the home run. It seems like there's been a pattern that a lot of times it's either a walk, a strikeout, or a home run. Is that an accurate portrayal in your opinion? And if so, what are the pluses and minuses for the game?
Well, yeah, it's an accurate portrayal, and it's been an accurate portrayal for several years. This is not the first year this is going on. It just happens to be what looks like it's going to be a record-breaking year for home runs. We're going to have over 6,000 of them. But I think there are too many home runs. I definitely think there are too many strikeouts, and there are too many walks also. There are too many plays in which we just don't have action. And part of the reason is we have a generation of hitters who are swinging as hard as they can on an 0-2 pitch like they are on a 3-0 pitch, and they're just trying to get a ball up in the air knowing I'm going to be a very productive player and I'm going to get paid if I hit a lot of home runs. And if I strike out a bunch of times along the way, it's not going to matter, and that troubles me a little bit. And we also have a generation of pitchers who are here to throw as hard as they can, and they don't want to just get you out. They want to strike you out, and that's why we have so many walks, so many strikeouts, so many home runs, and in my opinion, just not enough stuff in between.
I mean, obviously, you know, with the work I do on Penn State football and Penn State basketball, some people don't realize I also do some minor league baseball here in State College. And I've talked to a few scouts because, you know, let's face it, July 31st is coming up, so they want to scout every level when they make a deal. And he was telling me that years ago that, you know, they had to list an average fastball as 89 to 92. Now they have to list an average fastball as 92 to 94. What is that telling us about the trend in the game and specialization?
Well, it tells you there are more hard throwers today than ever, which is why the strikeout rate is up and maybe why the walk rate is up also. And, you know, this is pitching like I know I've never seen before, especially the last few years. Never had this many hard throwers, this many guys that have secondary stuff like this, and this many guys with dominant, overpowering stuff. And yet, if they miss their location and they throw, you know, even an overpowering pitch into the hitter's sweet spot, into the hitter's bat path, the one bat path these hitters have, the ball's going to travel. And believe me, when you're talking about an average fastball that maybe is 5 miles an hour faster than it was, say, 10, 15 years ago, that is an enormous, enormous difference. And that's part of this. Let's see how hard we can throw it. Let's see how far we can hit it. And that's how we play so much of the game today.
Does that then make what guys like Max Scherzer, Chris Sale, Clayton Kershaw, what they do when they're seeing a lineup three, sometimes four times through, does that make it even more significant what we're seeing from them?
Yeah, there's no doubt that the great pitchers of today have a harder road to a shutout, a complete game, whatever you want to call it, than maybe the pitchers of the 60s when, you know, runs weren't being scored at this level, home runs were not being hit. And when you can navigate your way through a lineup today, you are really doing something. I remember Oral Hershiser once telling me that in the mid-80s, his prime, against some National League lineups with a pitcher and some, let's face it, some pretty easy outs in there, you could navigate pretty clearly. And he said back then, 130 pitches for a pitcher was the equivalent of 100 pitches today. The effort you have to put in to throw 100 today is like throwing 130 in the mid-80s. And that's why the pitchers who do dominate today have a slightly harder road. And yet, it's easier to strike guys out today because people are not, you know, they don't have two-strike approaches. They're not choking it up and trying to put it in play. They're swinging as hard as they can. And then some of these pitchers are feasting on the over-aggressiveness of today's hitters.
How do you feel about shifts? I mean, each sport has its own rules as to where players can and can't go. And in baseball, they can't line up in foul territory except for the catcher to be a balk. But how do you feel about shifting in baseball?
It works, and I'm okay with it because of all the numbers that we track and all the new strategies that we use. I think the shifts are the ones with the most positive proof that this works. This guy hits it over here. Just look at the charts. And the charts, for the most part, don't lie. Now, it troubles me a little bit that we're shifting on so many players, even guys who are just up from the minor leagues. But this thought that, you know, shifting is bad and that it's illegal and that it's taking away the best of our hitters, sorry, I'm not buying that. If you can't hit a ball down the left field line because everyone's playing over on the other side of the field, well, then you, as a hitter, have to make an adjustment. So I'm not going to say it's illegal, and I don't feel sorry for any hitters. If you're getting hits taken away on the right side of the infield, well, you're going to have to change your bat path and learn to hit it the other way. Not easy to do, not suggesting that, but you got to try a little bit harder rather than just, you know, stubbornly try to hit it through or over the shift.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree with that. July 31st is coming up. Without making a transaction, the Pirates in a division where the leader is four games over 500 will get Starling Marte back. Is that as significant an acquisition as somebody can make in this month?
Well, it could be. It's possible, though, at the end of the month, somebody significant is going to move, whether it's J.D. Martinez or Ian Kinsler or Sonny Gray. But with so many teams in this, especially in the American League, there's a possibility it will not be a real big active trade deadline because there's so many teams out there trying to buy that last piece rather than sell. And having said that, these young GMs today are just super aggressive. They are relentless. They are not going to stop until they get what they want. But when you have a chance to win and you're the Twins, let's say, or you're the Rays and you weren't supposed to maybe be here and now you are, I think you have to go buy players, not sell them. And that's why this trade deadline could be very interesting. And again, maybe not as busy as we once thought.
Is that now a result of the second wild card, Tim? I mean, now we have seen a body of work now as to what the second wild card means. Is this one of the dominoes of a second wild card because so many people think they do have a chance?
Yes, absolutely. That second wild card has changed a lot of things, especially this year in the American League. Even though it's unwise to say, well, the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to make the playoffs, one will be the wild card. That second one is so open to so many teams, even teams under 500. I think it changes everything. And even though the wild card doesn't make sense for certain teams because, you know, one game in and then you're out and you trade your best young player to get a guy to get you into a one-game playoff, you lose and you're done. Making the playoffs in baseball, you know, you have a chance. This is not the NBA where the Warriors lost one game in the postseason. This can happen. The wild card teams win it all. We've seen it several times. So I think, yes, I think that's going to change everything, the wild card situation, especially the second wild card.
Well, in fact, San Francisco, where the Giants beat the Royals, they both came out of the wild card to get into the World Series a couple of years
ago. Right, and that changed everything. And that's why if you're hot going into October and you play a wild card game, and you don't have to throw your number one pitcher, you can get out of that and then start the playoffs fresh. Sometimes it gives you a slight advantage.
Now, we know sabermetrics are important to teams as to how they form certain ideas along the way. For you, when you look at sabermetrics, what's important to you and what's less important to you?
Well, the shifting is important, as we said, because you can actually see that this is where the guy hits it. I'm a little bit worried about how we're all talking about, you know, exit velocity and spin rate on, say, a curveball. When I think sometimes, look, I understand how important exit velocity is. How hard you hit the ball is important, and that's what Aaron Judge is proving this year. Part of the reason he's hitting 325 is he hits it so hard that it always finds a spot because no one can catch it because he hits it so hard. But I still think we've gotten away from just actually watching the games. And I remember when Don Mattingly was asked about Lucas Giolito's spin rate, he kind of joked, look, I don't have to know what a spin rate is to know that that's a great curveball right there. And our best hitters can see it. Our best instructors, managers, and coaches can see it. And it's just a little tool to help the rest of us see it, but sometimes I worry that we're going too deep into these numbers and we're not actually watching the games anymore.
Which brings me to my final question. On a daily basis, what is enjoyable about baseball to you?
Oh, just about everything still. You know, despite too many homers, walks, strikeouts, and homers, the game is still fabulous. I love to watch the athletic defense, especially from our middle infielders. I do like to watch dominant stuff by pitchers. I do like to watch our great young hitters hit a ball a mile. But I will always say that defense is the thing that really, really gets me going. I just love to watch an artistic double play made. And beyond all that, I love still to wake up in the morning and read the box scores and, you know, see who got four hits last night, even see who struck out four times last night. But the box scores are such an important part of the game and always have been. That's something that will always make me happy in the morning reading the box.
Yep, same here. I'll read the box scores every morning, too. Tim, absolute pleasure. Hey, enjoy the holiday. It's great to have you with us. Thanks for the time.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
Tim Kirchen, ESPN. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. Well, that was another fun one. Our thanks to Tim Kirchen for joining us on the show today. I think that we went in depth on a lot of things right now. I am someone who loves the game of baseball. Love it. It's actually the first sport that really. That and football were the first two sports, I think, in combination that really got me into being a sports fan at a very young age. As I said, I've told the story many times. The first time I ever went to Fenway Park, I was 5 years old. It was 1963. And I went with my grandfather, my mother's father, grandfather, and then my father. And we went. And my brother was four. And we went to the game, and I remember exactly where we sat. I remember walking into Fenway the first time and all that green grass. I thought, this is the greatest thing going. But that was great. And there are certain elements of the game. I think the only element of the game right now that I don't like is the element of wasting time between pitches. That's the only element of the game I don't like. I don't mind specialization of relief pitchers. I don't mind shifts. I mean, would I consider if they were to ask me about, you know, about whether or not I'd keep a shift on or not? Okay. I mean, that doesn't bother me. I'm completely in agreement with Tim Kirchen. Look, okay, guess what? Everybody has one of the adjustments are so important in sports, and adjustments are really important in baseball. A phenom comes up. Let's take Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is rolling right now. But there's going to be some point where everybody's going to have a book on Aaron Judge. And when they do, he'll probably go into a little mini slump at some point. Now, maybe next year, it may not be this year, but it might be next year. If he's really good, and I suspect he is really good, he will then adjust, and he'll adjust back. The ones that have longevity have the ability to adjust. And when Tim was talking about shifts, these guys that just want to pull the ball all the time and pull it and pull it and pull it. Well, guess what? You have to adjust. You have to have the ability once in a while to go the other way, to make the shortstop, if you're a left-handed hitter, suddenly start playing on the third base side of the bag. And I completely agree with that. But the only area of baseball I don't like is the walking around stuff, where I've got to adjust my batting glove and my routine every single time.
But now, do you think that's extending the game that much?
Yes.
Since when? Yes, so yes. What's your frame of reference, just out of curiosity? Since you were a kid, or like you want to take it since I was a kid, like the mid-80s?
Oh, I think it's been, I'd say from the mid-80s on. I mean, look at this year, for example. Do you realize this year there is currently 1.1 second more between pitches?
Okay, I understand that.
But so now let's take the pitches and add it up. It now adds 5 minutes and 28 seconds of absolute dead time to a game.
Right, and that's just since last year. And there is a remarkable difference over the past, like, maybe 5 years. It's like a 14-minute jump in game length. However,
it's all dead time.
But since 1986, it's only 20. It's only 20 minutes in total since 1986, which is when I remember baseball. Like, that's when I started.
But that's 20 minutes of nothing.
Well, yeah, I agree. But I'm just saying it's not that big a difference to me.
Oh, it's a huge difference to me. Step into the box and hit.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but, you know, now that I look at the number, I'm like, what am I complaining about?
step into the box and hit. No, well, no. You know, want to know why soccer's taking off? Soccer, you go, the match starts at 1 o'clock, they're done at 3.
Yeah. You have a point. I mean, viewership is down. You can't deny it, so.
My point is, not be Speedy Gonzalez. I like the fact you can sit there and have a conversation with somebody at a game. I'm not saying rush, rush, rush. But stop wandering around. Get back in the box and hit. Stop with the mumbo jumbo. Get up on the hill and pitch. Stop with the catcher making constantly going to the mound.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Marcus Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Look, you need a great insurance agent. You just need a great insurance agent. Simple as that. Because along the way, there's so many items that you need to have insured. And you need to get the best insurance at the right price that's going to fit your budget, and you feel like you're going to be covered. And if something ever happens, you want that agent to go to bat for you right away and get it done. Well, Purdy Insurance has done that for decades. They're the best in the business. Purdy Insurance, 4th Street, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And again, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Time now for the Sports Bozo of the Day. My choice is a Dallas Cowboys fan. The beaches are closed in New Jersey, but he and his family were out there yesterday. Governor Christie, what were you thinking?
That went over like a lead balloon. Or like him going over.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
There were some mean tweets out there, too. I'm not a big body shamer, but let's put it this way. Sea life jokes were made. It was bad.
Yeah, I'm sure there were. But what were you thinking? I mean, I realize we can't always do things like the image, the optics. You know, how much we hear about image and optics all the time. How about, like, just do the right thing? Hey, let's try that one. See how it goes.
Amen. Amen.
All right. You know, image, optics, the heck with that stuff. Well, why don't you just try doing the right thing? There we go. Let's see how that works. All right. Richard Sandomir, New York Times, wrote a book on the making of Pride of the Yankees. We're going to have him on the show. It's a fascinating book. We are at a point where if there is a movie about something, we watch the movie, and to us, that is how it happened. Every once in a while, there might be poetic license about something in a movie. I'll give you an example. Apollo 13, for example. You see that Ken Mattingly, true. They thought he was exposed to the measles, hadn't had it yet, so he couldn't go. True. But you also see in the movie that he's the one that goes into the command module, and he's the one, along with John Young and some others, that figure out how to get the command module back up after being shut down by using a minimum amount of power. In reality, that was a group of people who kept going in there and doing that. It wasn't just him. But for artistic license, it was just easier to use him. Well, Pride of the Yankees, with the great Gary Cooper. It's a movie that received 11 Oscar nominations. And he wrote about how it shaped the image of Lou Gehrig. And he researched Gehrig's life. He researched the story behind the movie. And what was factual and what was fanciful. And what he came up with is that it's not all that factual, and it certainly is fanciful. Now, there is a little bit of both in there. And they needed to teach Gary Cooper a lot about batting for the movie. And he says there's certainly a lot of folklore, but remember, Cooper's right-handed. So they had to reverse what he was doing because Gehrig was left-handed. And Cooper did learn how to throw left-handed, so you got to give him a lot of credit for that.
If I would have gotten that role, it would have been embarrassing.
Right. Now, well, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, seriously, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, that's part of the quote. Remember, Gary Cooper's doing a job.
Right, of course.
And in his job, he had to do that. Now, I mean, not everybody can just do whatever they want, like the suit.
Right.
So, now, there's a moment in the film that grabs the heart. And that's when Gehrig just knows he's not right. And he's waiting for his turn at bat, and he realizes, you know what? I don't think I can do this anymore. And he takes himself out of the lineup, and shockwaves go through the stadium. Well, that's not exactly how it happened. Gehrig decided the night before, and he told his manager, Joe McCarthy, the next day. And so the crowd knew before the first pitch. Then there's the speech itself. If you read Richard Sandomir's book, which I hope you do, I think it's a great read. He said it was really hard to get a grasp on what he actually said because newspapers published different versions of his speech and there's no complete newsreel of it. He said, now the famous line that he has that Gary says, I consider myself to be the luckiest man on the face of the earth, right? I mean, I've caught a bad break, but I still consider myself to be the luckiest man on the face of the earth. Now, what is your assumption about where that happens in the speech? Your assumption about where that happens is it's that at the end of the speech. But actually, he says it at the beginning of the speech. Cooper in the movie says it at the end, so everybody thinks it's at the end. And you can't blame them, because if you're sitting there doing a movie, what's the, like, wow moment is that line. So from an artistic point of view, I think we'd all sit there and go, let's just put that at the end. That's really good. But in reality, Gehrig said it at the beginning.
It was the second line. It was the second line in the speech, according to... Yeah. The author of the book.
Yeah. Second line of the speech. There was always, in the movie, they play down the relationship between Gehrig's mother and wife. Okay. Which was not quite right. There's, you know, Sandomir is very detailed. He should be. You should be accurate. And that's, you know, it's why he's one of the best in the business. So he looks at things like dates and stats and lineups and things like that. He says, look, they're sloppy.
But do you think they're being fair? Do you think he's being fair? Like, I didn't read the book, so I'm going to plead ignorance here. He's not trashing the movie, is he?
Oh, no, he's not trashing the movie, but he also wants everyone to realize that, you know, you've given this version of it, what's real, what's not real. Also, Gehrig's wife, held out a little bit for a period of time about whether they should make the story. I want to say she ended up getting like $35,000 for it or something like that. Which, you know, look, back then is big money. Okay, that's big money. But that's that. I think that's what she, and it kind of went back and forth because Sam Goldwyn at first didn't want to make the movie. And you're like, eh. And if you notice, there aren't a lot of baseball scenes in the movie if you really watch it, which actually I think is a pretty smart move. And so what Goldwyn wanted to do was he looked at the Gehrig movie as typical 1940s entertainment. Let's take a heroic figure, add in a little bit of humor, add in a little romance. Oh, and by the way, we're going to have to show some baseball, too. And, you know, the studio put up with, you know, in the studio, you know, back then the studios played so many games. One of the games that they played with is who's going to play Lou Gehrig? Right. And it was ridiculous because Sam Goldwyn already had Gary Cooper under contract, and Goldwyn owned the rights to the movie. Now, Sandy Beers does tell you that he thinks Pride of the Yankees is a classic. And he says, look, it's true to the spirit of the subject. But he also researched Gehrig's life just to see, like, okay, what's real here and what's not? See, that's and it's the spirit of it's true, which is perfectly fine. But so he went through, okay, what's factual, what's not, in going through just for the research of it. Now, look, we don't do a lot of that at times. I mean, even modern day. Remember the game? It was Joe's last game. They're playing Illinois. And Derek Moy was hurt. Had hurt his foot. And on the drive where Silas Red scored the touchdown to put him in front, Moy made two great catches. Now, what's the mythology surrounding that? That Derek Moy came off the bench, overcame his injury, and on that last drive, he got himself into the game, made two critical catches, and helped Penn State win. All right. Now, here's the reality of it. Derek Moy entered the game in the third quarter. I think that's just a local mythology. Right. You're like, it doesn't really matter. No, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't. But at the same time, it was, you know, for a couple of years, I was like, oh, boy, the way what Moy did. You know, Moy did great things in the last drive. But he also had been in the game for several series. What's it that he just suddenly showed up and caught a couple balls? And that is what happens from time to time, just on storytelling. And so he decided to take a look at something that is in lore, considered to be a really good movie. And it didn't receive 11 Oscar nominations for nothing. And ticket sales were off the charts.
That's number 22 in like the AFI's 100 movies of all time. I mean, it's Babe Ruth's in it, for God's sakes. I mean, come on. Babe Ruth is in the movie.
Yeah, Babe Ruth is in the movie. Yes. You're absolutely right about that. He's in the movie.
He's in the movie. That alone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the whole idea of storytelling, it's the same thing with like any legend you've ever, you know, where you grew up. We've all told stories that actually happened one way but have become way more interesting over the years. It's the same kind of thing. You got to make it more interesting.
Yeah, but you know, this is 3 years after his death. So, I mean, is it that far removed?
No, but they wanted to capitalize on it. I mean, he died a year before the movie came out.
Right.
They wanted to capitalize on it.
Yeah, they went back and forth about this, and Goldwyn's not a baseball fan.
Nope, he knew nothing about baseball.
All right? He was not a baseball fan.
He had no interest in this.
And they had to be convinced that, like, look, we can make some cash out of this thing.
They made $8 million. $8 million in 1942.
And they paid $35,000 for the rights.
Yep.
And that's what it comes down to.
That's totally what it comes down to. Absolutely. Right. I agree with you 100%.
I mean, they made money off of it. Now, one thing that it's always been talked about is that for Gary Cooper, that since he's right-handed, they took all the scenes he was in and they reversed them to make it look like he was left-handed, and that's not true. He actually went out and he gave it a shot as being a left-handed guy.
Well, probably
now, this is going to be on Thursday's show, by the way. We're going to talk about all this. Sorry to cut you off there.
No, you're cool. I think part of the reason why that myth probably grew is because the only Academy Award it actually won was for film editing. So there you go. So that might have been why that myth grew, like, because
that's a good point. You know, I never thought of it that way, Chris. That's a good point. I knew they only had one, and I knew it was for film editing, but I didn't put two and two together until you just said that. That's good. I think I'll bring that up to them.
There you go.
Right? So when I ask the question to make it sound like I am ultra intelligent when it happens, you and the audience from reality will know I stole it directly from you.
That's all right. That's my job as producer, right? That's my job.
Well, just want to make sure you understand the rules going in.
There's actually, I'm actually reading on a site now that it says there was actually one point where the film was flopped only once. It actually happened once during a minor league scene portraying Gehrig's minor league days at Hartford.
Ah, yes, the Hartford Blues.
Yep.
Today, they have a minor league team in Hartford named the Yard Goats. They're an affiliate of the Colorado Rockies.
Wow.
Now, you know what a yard goat is?
I'm afraid to ask.
No, actually, don't be afraid to ask. Our yard goat is slang for someone whose job it was to route trains in the yard. In other words, get them to move from one track to the other.
Hmm.
They were known as, you know, as yard goats.
All right. Right.
It's like, you know, not quite like a tugboat captain out in the harbor, but it was their job to get one train from, okay, I need track A open. Let's get the train from track A to B. That way it's open for C to get through.
Interesting old vernacular for such a thing.
Yes. So they're the Hartford Yard Goats.
There you go. Go Yard Goats.
And to let them know there's a modern slant to them, they play at the Dunkin' Donuts ballpark. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Great to have Chris on board today. Great job. Our thanks to Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. We talked about the Sixers and the Phillies today. And also to Tim Kirchen of ESPN. Coming up on Wednesday, Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. We're going to talk about college football with him. And Richard Sandomir is going to join us as well on the show Thursday. We've got a lot going on. Oh, Dieter Kurtenbach is going to join us, too. We're going to talk about the NBA and free agency. So we got a lot going on this week. This is not a slow week by any stretch of the imagination.
Especially when this is considered like the dead space of sports.
Yeah, I agree. This is the dead space of sports, and we're trying to make it anything but. That's why having Philip Pritchard on, the keeper of the cup, to talk about the Stanley Cup. I thought that was a fun one on Friday. I hope everyone enjoyed it as much as I did.
Agreed.
And then Tim Kirchen today. It's always great to talk to Tim Kirchen anytime. I could talk to Tim Kirchen in January. I feel like I had a great day. Chris, thanks so much. Great job. We're back on Wednesday. Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. We wanted to get Dennis back on the show for a while. We have accomplished our goal. Remember, we're only a week away, believe it or not, from SEC Media Day. It's next Monday. Today's show's been brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Adam in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.